our first speaker. I give you King.
Good evening. I'm an addict, and my name is King. Can we move one of these things?
Yeah.
Okay. Excuse me? This one? Okay. I'm sorry, I'm a little dyslexic. One is too many and 1,000 is never enough. I'm an addict and my name is King.
Amen.
And I'm blessed by my higher power not to have the desire to use today. So for that, I am immensely grateful. And I'd like to thank this area for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope on a subject that I know nothing about. And I guess I need to thank the gentleman who recommended me, since he had the audacity to come sit in this meeting. This is not something I like doing. It's not like I am afraid to speak in front of people, because I talk to people every day for my job. But at the same time, there's a part of me that's in my belly that says, I really don't want to be telling those folks my business inside me. But I've been here long enough to know that in order for a king to stay clean, King need to share what's inside his belly, not what's inside my head. So when I first got here, they would tell me things like, well, if you want what we have, then you have to do what we do. Chase your recovery the same way you chased your drug. Well, I'm from Harlem. I grew up in New York City in a project. My chasing was around the corner, on the subway, on a bus, on some skates. It may have been any kind of way in order to get what I had to get. Most importantly, if somebody got thrown out the window, I was chasing that. If whatever the dope was that somebody died from, that's what I was going to chase the most. I started using it when I was 14, which is 1964. I stopped in 1992. I love spitback methanol. So for those who don't know what spitback methanol is, let me just clear that up real quick. I wasn't in the methanol program. I stood outside on Lexington Avenue and 125th Street. I waited for the addict to come out who had the methanol. He took his bottle from the doctor. He put it in his mouth. He spit it in a bottle. He came outside. He sold it to me, and I bought it. Ugh. Okay, now we talking. Because I loved it. I do anything I can to keep from being sick. I don't know about y'all, but it ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun. So, my any lengths started a long time ago. I just didn't know that was going to any lengths. All I knew was King didn't like being sick. And if methadone was going to keep me going, give me some legs for a minute, in order for me to keep moving, then I was going to drink whatever I had to drink in order to not feel that way. Ain't no fun having chills and sweats at the same time and having your belly burst and you can't move. So I don't know what going to any lengths is. I just did what I had to do. I hear people say that, but my process has given me the opportunity to stretch going to any lengths. I am always challenged by my higher power to be a better person. I don't know about test. I don't have a God that tests me. But he definitely challenges me to be a better person. Why I say that is because the real cool, profound way would be to tell you how much I go to any lengths to do very, very well. But I think I really want to talk about how much I go to any lengths to keep from failing. Because failure is so much more a commonplace for me. So I go to any lengths to not do what I got to do in order to do what I need to do. And what I mean by that is that I could fantasize about being the best person, but will I have the open-mindedness and the willingness to move my darn feet? I may not want to do that. I understand that for me, fear is the most glaring character defect that keeps me from going to any lengths. So I aspire to be this great person. And most of the time, I'd rather go to sleep. Hope some of y'all understand what I'm talking about. It's a lot more simpler to go to sleep and do nothing and wake up the next day and say, damn, you ain't do it. Well, maybe I'll do it again today. But the fact of the matter is, I still ain't going to move my feet. So our 10th step talks about going to bed knowing that you did the inventory of your day, and you know that when you lay your head on the pillow, you did not accomplish the things you wanted to accomplish during the course of that day. So what lengths am I willing to go to move past me to get where I need to go? I really want to share with y'all that sometimes the quicksand of the fear is greater than the desire. What I mean is that we call it lazy. The quote unquote real nice word is procrastination. But the fact of the matter is, dude, you're just afraid. I predict the outcome, the conclusion. I direct the story. I put y'all in it. And then I don't do nothing. And I go to any lengths in my head to have the conclusion to the story written. But at the same time, I never get the joy of accomplishing what it is that I needed to accomplish. The old saying is joy comes in the morning. I say that joy comes in the journey. So, here's the deal. And y'all tell me at the end if I really can go to any lengths. Since 2007, there was an economic breakdown in this country. So in about 3 days, I lost about $45,000. About a month later, I had lost my company. By the end of all of that stuff, I was $750,000 worth of debt. I had no relationship, I had no house, and I was homeless with 17 years clean. In 2008, I had a lung operation. I stayed in the hospital for 31 days, and I decided I wanted to smoke cigarettes again. I'm only talking about me. This ain't about the insanity. It's about the restoration and the unwillingness to go to any lengths. Because my unwillingness to go to any lengths, because I just smoked a cigarette a little while ago, is that I sometimes can't tell me no. I know there's some people in this room that can identify with me, but we like to sit in meetings and raise our hand and talk about how good I did it with everything I needed to do that day. I'm just going to tell you about the things I ain't do good at, because I go to any lengths to not do good. I suffer from the, we all tell me that I suffer from the disease of addiction. And I share with you that I am the disease of addiction. I am my own disease. It's not outside. It ain't under a skirt. It ain't around the corner. It don't do push-ups. It's right here inside of me, and I make all the decisions to fail. And it's a darn shame when I go to bed at night and I say, dang, I wanted to do this, 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 and this, and I only did that, and I stayed home. So after all of those things that happened, and I ended up sleeping in a car for a little while, I ended up sleeping with a friend of mine for a little while, I ended up staying at somebody else's house for a little while, I ended up going to almost like a halfway house. And y'all tell me humility must come first, but it's always a result of humiliation. And I'm trying to figure out, God, so what you want me to do with this? Because prayer is the lifeblood of what we do. And in order for me to go to any lengths, I got to have a prayer life. And if I'm not incorporating my prayer life, how can I walk in the spirit of a God of my understanding when I feel the way I do? So my going to any lengths is about going to sleep, waking up, not knowing I can't drink no spitback methadone, but I'm still sick. I'm clean. Y'all tell me I'm serene. I'm praying, but I'm still sick and sad because I don't want to wake up. Because my life is not supposed to be like this now. So where do I find the wherewithal inside my belly to move forward in spite of the fact that everything about me says don't move nowhere? And it's in our step process. Because I'm powerless over the way I feel. I got hope in the second step. I got to believe in a power that's greater than me, that I don't see him, and I'll be trying to say, MF, you need to hurry up and do something because you're taking too damn long. I don't know about y'all, but I talk to my God like this. See, I came from a place called Tent City. It's three stories down in Grand Central Station. We take water, we take rocks and fire and paper and put it together and burn it, and that's how we stay warm. So when I say to go into any lengths, I've had to do all kinds of things to go to any lengths, but the fact of the matter is that it ain't just that simple about, I just ain't used today. I'm sorry, but I just ain't used today is not an excuse. I just didn't shoot no crack, I didn't smoke no crack today is not a darn excuse. Because we didn't come here to just not use. Not using must come first, but it don't come last. I hope y'all understand what I'm talking about. Because just because I didn't use the day does not mean that, oh yeah, it's a successful day. Go ask your landlord. Go ask the bank. Ask them if it was successful because you didn't use. Ask them what they're going to tell you. Because I know when them creditors was calling me, I could not tell them I didn't use the day. Because they was not trying to hear my problem. So going to any lengths, not using today, has been heightened. My awareness becomes heightened by my prayer life. Because at that point in time, y'all tell me about, well, I'm only going to be with God when it comes to this point in time in your life. Well, you know what? I had to get God as a friend again. So anyway, my dad has a stroke in 2008, right after I got out the hospital. He suffers from dementia. He is 93 years old. His health is deteriorating tremendously. He has gotten to the point where he can't walk, he can't breathe, he can't wipe himself. But this is the dude I hated most of my life. So y'all tell me I need to be of service. I won't want to serve this MF. Because the little boy inside me says, remember all the stuff he did to you? But y'all tell me I need to be of service. Y'all tell me I need to give in spite of how I feel. My eighth step says he goes on my list. I need to make amends. My prayer life says I got a parental forgiveness prayer. So I got to forgive my parents for everything they did, forgive me for everything I did to them, and then do the right thing. I got 5 minutes to tell you all that. That, and thank you. That dude, I've been back and forth with the hospital with him probably 80 times in the last year and a half. I got a baby sister who is my baby sister was in the chemo. She lost her breast. She had to have reconstructive surgery. She come out. She get infected. She got to go back again. I got so much stuff on my head, sometimes I don't feel like getting up, much less going to any limbs. I got to go to work. I got to say, yes, sir. I got clients that call me sir when I was called motherfucker all my life. I'm just talking about me. And somebody thought that the things I talk about in meetings, because this is all I talk about. I don't have time to be coming in a meeting talking about some profound stuff. I'm just trying to get through the next day. And the next day is the day. So when I go to any lengths, and I hope someone got some hope out of this, I hope that somebody understands what I'm talking about, because the real deal is that in spite of not using, in spite of dope not coming first, life going to come first. And life going to show up. And don't think that this stuff is pretty, because it ain't always. But the deal is that we can still persevere. It is a challenge to be a man in spite of the fact that you feel like a boy. I hope y'all caught what I'm talking about. Because the deal is that life on life terms, going to any limbs, is going to make that boy become mature enough to start acting, being a man in spite of the fact that he don't want to. Because I can't say I don't want to no more. I can say I don't like it. I can say I don't deserve it. I can say, but you know what? Y'all tell me all the time. I say, why me? And y'all say, why not you? So, hopefully, I was able to share something that gave somebody that's new some hope. Somebody that's old that says, it ain't happened to me yet. I'm one of them guys that said it ain't gonna never happen to me. But I'm here to tell you that it happened and I'm still here.
That's right.
You know. I done been on the bridge sitting there wanting to jump off. I done have partners that killed themselves because they lost $1 million. I know white boys, or I shouldn't say it that way. I know coworkers that were in other states that killed themselves because of this economic depression that we had. And I refused to go out like that. Especially because I love Spitback Methadone and he brought me out anyway.
That's right.
So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, family. My name is Esther. I'm still a grateful recovering addict. Hey, back. Our next speaker is Charles, my brother.
Oh, this is N.A. You'll be slapping me fine.
I've been hugging you for 50 years.
Hi, my name is Charles. I'm a grateful recovering addict. And I'm very enthusiastic about sharing at a convention. I started this process in 1987. My clean date is October 88. And I'm excited about this, even now today. They say, Charlie, you're going to speak about anything that's possible. Anything is possible. So, in the almost 25 years that I've been clean, I didn't go to the mirror and practice a speech. I let God do what he does for me on a regular. And that is keep me centered where no matter when somebody makes the call for Charlie to do any kind of service for Narcotics Anonymous, it's always yes. And it's because in 1987, when I started this process, I started to learn that anything is possible. For an addict, anything is possible if you don't use. And they told me I was going to be talking to addicts. So, if you an addict and you're in here, trust me, anything is possible. Now let me go a little further. Anything is possible if you do like we suggest you do. Anything is possible if you do the work. The work is the 12 and 12. And we got another 12 if you're doing service. And for those of you that don't know, we talk about the concepts. When I came in 87, we fought for positions. We couldn't wait to be the coffee person. We had 5 or 6 people had to go out of the room so that you can all vote on who you wanted to be the coffee person. How many people are we voting on today? Back then in 1987, I think narcotics had been about 5 years old in New York. I'm from the greater New York region. And had been about 5 years old. And my predecessors, who had 1 to 5 years clean, was teaching me with one day how it works. And what they were teaching me in my first 14 months was, no matter what, keep coming. They told me things like, if your ass falls off, put it in a paper bag, bring it to the meeting, and we'll help you put it back on. And if we can't help you put it back on, we'll teach you a new way to sit. So, I did what they said. But now if you're listening to me, you hear me saying about I came in 1987, but my clean date is October 88. So what my predecessors had done for me was to plant the seed. I came in beaten, like most of us, but you know what? I wasn't 3 stories down on underneath wherever the tent city was. I wasn't eating out of garbage pails. I had women that took care of me on a regular. Okay? If I needed drugs, I got money. I had a woman one time that was a nurse and made sure that I had clean syringes, new syringes, all the time. And a bottle of vodka to come down on if I was too high off of the crack. So I didn't suffer in that sense. But I suffered because I couldn't do crap the way I was supposed to do crap. Now, you know, I love to swear. You know, I love to curse. But you know what? I don't got to do that today. For some strange reason, in spite of my stupid ass self, I'm changing. And I think the reason for me changing is, like I said in the beginning, I love Narcotics Anonymous. And you know how you love your man or you love your woman, and you, anything is possible. Whatever I could do, whatever you want. That's how I feel about Narcotics Anonymous. And what has happened is these changes are awesome. I'm going to give you a little story. My man called me, we want you to speak. I've never spoken at a convention before, and I really didn't give a crap whether I spoke or not. Because the most important thing for me is to stay clean and to get what this process has given me or making it possible for me to have. But like I said, anytime somebody asks me to do something Narcotics Anonymous, not a problem. So Friday morning, I jump on my motorcycle. They call me Motorcycle Charlie from Westchester, New York, up around the White Plains area. And I knew it was going to rain. It was nothing I didn't know. It wasn't strange. So I got up 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going to ride down on my bike, and I want to jump on the ferry and come across. You know, I want to come that way. So I go down the Garden State Parkway that takes me right down to Cape May or whatever it is, or Lewis Ferry, whatever it is. And it started, and when I got to my bike after I left my home, it started like a little, I was like, oh, here it comes. Put on my rain gear. I got on full leather. I got the chaps on. I got the leather pants on. I got the leather shirt. I got everything I need because I've been riding for a long time, and I'm prepared. Not afraid. This process has made me not afraid. There's nothing that I put in my mind and my heart that I want to do that I cannot do. Jumped on my bike and I said, I said, yo, me and my boy, you know, I call him, that's my boy, you know. You know, y'all call him higher power, y'all call him Jesus, Muhammad, whatever, but that's my boy. So me and my boy, we jump on the bike and we gets to rolling. I'm coming across the Tappan Zee Bridge. Get to a Garden State, and it starts pouring. I'm coming. See, I'm coming because I got a commitment, man. You know, y'all gave me something to do. I'm coming to a convention. I'm going to speak. And almost 25 years of being clean, I ain't never been asked to speak at no convention, even at 12 o'clock at night. I'm talking about anything is possible when you have the love for something. I have the love for Narcotics Anonymous. The wind is blowing. I'm sitting on a $750 badass ultra classic Harley Davidson, and we rocking and we rolling. I say, yo, man, what you trying to do? Blow me off the damn bike? Make a long story short, because anything's possible, man. There's so, everybody in here could talk about some of the things that has been possible for them that they never thought that could be possible. We've all experienced that. That's a good topic for me. I can go on and the tape can cut off and I could still be going. Talking about how possible anything that you put in your mind you can do today. So this process has given me an attitude of forgiveness, love, patience, all the things that a higher power is, all the attributes that a higher power would have. So I'm rolling and I'm wet and I'm cold. Stopped and get gas one time and I took everything off just to chill out for a minute. Now I got 11 o'clock ferry reservation. Jump back on the bike. I'm about a mile and a half from the exit. I'm all the way down to Garden State is like exit 2. And I started at 200 and something. 240-something. I'm on the bike 4 or 5 hours going to go to this ferry in the rain. About a mile and a half from the exit, the bike shuts off. It shuts off. I was like, what? Now I'm flustered. I get off the bike. I'm looking around. I don't see anything. And I'm not thinking. You know, you get flustered. You know, you want to kill somebody. You want to get all stupid. But something like that happens. You've already been on the road 4 hours in the rain, going to a convention to speak at 12 o'clock at night. Huh? Process is the best thing ever happened to me. I chilled out. I got off my bike. The police rolls up. That's one thing. I ain't scared of police no more because I ain't doing nothing wrong. You know what I'm saying? You know, it wasn't always like that. The police come. I have to make sure I stash my stash before they get there because I know they're coming. What do you want to do? You want to fool around with the bike, try to get it started, or you want me to get a tow truck? Send me the tow truck. Because I'm flustered. I can't think. I don't know what to do. But this process kicked in, and it gave me the humility that we talk about to, like, get this done. So I go to my little baby sister. Now, she's all upset. I don't know if she's upset because I'm over here on the other side of the road. But then I find out later she's all upset. Got everybody from Westchester on point to come get me if it's necessary. So in the meantime, anything is possible if you keep your head. If you do the things that this process teaches you, you get through it. It may not be the easiest thing. But once you get through it, you say, thank you, my man. You know, I chilled out long enough for you to do your thing. So I was cool. We got the bike on the flatbed. And so the flatbed driver and myself told me, well, let's take the bike over to the ferry. Maybe they'll let me push it on. And then I can get somebody on this side to help me get it wherever I need to get it. They said, no. You can't push it on. You got to drive it on. Okay. That's not going to work. So, the flatbed driver's cool because I'm being cool with him. I'm not all stupid. Like I really want to be. I'm not that way. So I'm chilling because I got to get this done. I got to come over to the convention center so that I can share 12 o'clock at night. On Saturday night, not Friday night. It's still Friday. So I know this power greater than myself is going to help me to do what I have to do to get where I have to go. One way or the other. I know that from my own experience from being in this process for almost 25 years. So I got to go to the bathroom now. Bike's still on the truck. Go to the bathroom. Now I'm being cool. Now I see this cop. And I say, you know, I'm asking respectfully, you know anything about a mechanic around this area, blah, blah, blah. And he started to get involved with helping me. And I said, well, I got to go to the bathroom. I go to the bathroom. I got to take off the rain gear. You know, I got on all this stuff. And I know I ain't got too much time. I'm trying to get this through. And I come out. And the officer, because of my demeanor, because of what this process has taught me, said, let's help this brother if we can help him. He went over to the desk where they sell the tickets, and there was a lady there. Her husband knew a mechanic. He wasn't a motorcycle mechanic, but he was a mechanic. Now, me and my boy, we work in this thing. We work. Now, look, we done worked for 3-4 hours coming down in the rain. We ain't giving up now. We ain't giving up now. You know, this party is still going on. Long story short, take the bike to this guy, finally get his number, find out where he was. It's another 3 miles away. Meanwhile, this tow truck driver is still hanging with me. He's like, ain't no problem. Whatever you got to do, my brother. I'm like, bet. Take the bike off. I call my mechanic, because now I'm kind of like calm because I'm going to this mechanic shop. Turns out the guy didn't know anything about motorcycles, but he was a race car mechanic. He had motors all over the place on lifts and all kinds of stuff. Get the bike off, and I'm talking to my mechanic, and I'm mechanically inclined because I went to school, American Motorcycle Mechanic School, back in 1989. Or 79, I'm sorry. So we're going through the process of elimination. And one of the things I learned years ago, when there's a problem, because I studied electronics, you go to the weakest link to find out where your problem is, and you proceed from there. So we're all over the place, and we're looking here, and we're looking there. We can't see what he's talking about, and blah, blah, blah. So to make a long story short, we go to the fuse box. 5 minutes. This is on time, because I'm almost done with this. We go to the fuse box. We pull the fuses out. We can't find a fuse. And then all of a sudden, the mechanic pulls out a fuse. He goes, oh, I found one. Now, I'm still working with my man here now, because I got to get this bike done, because I got to come here to speak at 12 o'clock Saturday night. So me and my man, we know that. And we're going to do what we can to get here. If I can't, then I'm going to call you and say, yo, baby, I'm back up the road. I can't do it. We find the fuse. So happens, my man says, the mechanic goes, oh, you know, I got some fuses like this. I said, bet. So he goes, now it's a 15-amp fuse. And he didn't have a 15-amp, he had a 20-amp fuse. Pulled out the old one, threw the 20-amp fuse in there, hit the button, boom! Fired up. Me and my boy, we like, happy. Boy, we happy. Come to find, I knew there was like a 2 o'clock ferry, and so this was like 1:30. I was like, and I'm only 2 miles away from the ferry. 2 o'clock ferry, I was on it. Me and my man, rolling. And guess what? I'm here 12 o'clock Saturday night sharing at this. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. And you know why I'm doing it? Because I love Narcotics Anonymous. And I learn what people have to learn here to do what we have to do. And we got to understand when we come in here, we need to learn, because anything is possible if you only believe. And if they told me back in the beginning, God will move mountains, but we got to bring the shovel. Thanks.